Malachim Aleph, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Chavav. At the end of the Pasuk, it says that the Shlomo said, let's cut the baby in half. So the real mother said, no, don't cut him in half. Give the whole baby to him, to her, to the other woman, because obviously she didn't want him to be killed. And the other one said, no, let's cut him. Right now, it's interesting that Shlomo HaMelech pointed out, this is the reason that a person was giving two eyes, two ears, and two nostrils. So in case something like this would happen, it would be very easy. Just cut him exactly in half like this. I was always wondering, how do they cut him in half? Bottom, top, and the...
This way or that way?
So it sounds like they cut him across the middle, from his head down, all the way down to his feet. Or that, meaning, obviously they didn't, but that's what he was intending, because, everyone was given two eyes, two ears. That way, each half would have one eye and one ear and one nostril. Now, so we ended up with the question, why is it that the woman said, meaning the woman was not really the mother, so the real mother said, yeah, it's fine, give her the baby, it's fine, I give up my right. And the other woman says, no, let's cut him in half, let's go with the plan. What was she thinking? She should have said, yeah, okay, great, you want to give me the child? I'll be happy with that. Sounds like a great deal. She brings it down over there?
Because she didn't want to take care of a child that wasn't hers.
Right.
She wasn't interested in that.
Right. Right. But the Meiri brings down, which is what you mentioned, that it was really a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law. And let's see what happens. Now, the daughter-in-law, her husband died, which meant that if her husband died, then she had a baby. The problem is, if the baby dies within the first 30 days, he's considered to be a nephil, what the Gemara calls. The Gemara calls a nephil a baby who's basically...
Right, so it doesn't count.
Having a child. Right. Doesn't count, because he was born, he died within 30 days. He's not considered to be, to take to life, so to speak. It's almost as equivalent as a stillborn. So if the baby dies within 30 days, what does that mean? That means she'd have to do Yibum. Now, who would she have to do Yibum with? The baby that her mother-in-law just gave birth to. Now, a baby obviously cannot do Yibum. She has to wait until the baby is 13 years old to do Yibum. Which means she would have to wait for 13 years to get married. To get Chalitza, at least. Right? Obviously, he's not going to marry her at 13.
It means they didn't... Her husband had no other brothers.
Right, he had no other brothers. He was a single child until this baby was born. So now, the daughter-in-law is in deep trouble over here. If her baby, in fact, is dead, that means she is a subject to Yibum, and she cannot do Yibum now for another 13 years. Or Chalitza.
Her son.
What?
She'd have to marry her own son.
Oh. No. No. If she was claiming, if she was claiming that it was her son, right?
Yeah.
If it was her son, she would not need Yibum.
Yeah.
Right? And so she would not, obviously she wouldn't do Yibum with her own son. She knew, meaning the daughter-in-law knew, that it was her son that was really dead. Right? She knew that. But she was lying, because she knew that if the truth came out, that the daughter-in-law's son is dead, she now falls to Yibum. She now has to do Yibum with the mother-in-law's son, who was just born 3 days ago, and she would have to wait for 13 years, which she was not prepared to do. So what does she do? She lies about it. She says, no, that's my son, right? Now, she still had a problem, because even, let's say the son was given to her. What would that mean? According to the truth, according to the MS, she had what's called a zikas yibum, a connection to this only child who's left, now to the mother-in-law. She has a connection to him. Meaning, if she would, now, let's say she would go at the halacha and Yibum, if a woman who's subject to Yibum, she's not allowed to go out and marry anybody else, because she has a connection, Izika, some kind of connection, to a link to the other brother of her late husband. Now, it's considered an Aveira to marry somebody else while this woman has a connection, a link to her late husband's brother, right? But this mother was prepared to do so. She was prepared to go ahead and do this Avera and marry somebody else because she was not prepared to wait for 13 years. But now, when Shlomo HaMelech said, you know what, let's cut the baby in half and kill him, now she was presented with a golden opportunity. Because now she would get rid of that Avera,
well, yeah,
which was getting married.
If you kill the kid,
right, exactly.
No,
if you kill the connection, you kill the kid, there's no connection. She's free as a bird. She doesn't have any Avera on her hands. And when when the other mother, her mother-in-law, said, no, you can take him, right? She was thinking to herself, no, I don't want to take him. If I would take him, that would mean that I'm still over an Avera by marrying someone else because I still have a connection to this boy, to this baby, right? So she actually preferred that he would die. That way she's free and she can marry anybody she wants. That's why she said that, no, I prefer that he dies. He gets cut in half. Yeah? It's clear?
I'm confused now. Whose real baby was it?
Okay, it was really the mother-in-law's baby.
That died?
No. The baby that's alive belongs to the mother-in-law. Right? The daughter-in-law is the mother of the dead child. Okay? That's what really happened. Okay?
Who knows who is really the
baby?
They both knew exactly what happened.
Said something different. This is from Midrash or what?
This is from the Meiri, who's one of the commentators.
Ah, but he is treated this different way.
Yeah.
But if read this story, it's not clear.
Right. I mean, yeah. It's not in the Navi.
I always thought it was the other way.
There's a mention of two women, prostitute or something like that. Nothing more.
Right. Right, it doesn't specify.
There is another explanation for this story.
Yes, it's another explanation.
Okay,
so let's go over it again. Nochamal, right? So the mother-in-law, meaning that both women knew the truth. They knew the truth, right? Yeah. Just one was lying, and one was saying the truth, right? We just don't know who was lying. So now, the lying one was the daughter-in-law, right? Why was she lying? Because the cheshbon is like this. According to the truth, the daughter-in-law's baby is dead. Which means, since he's dead, she now has to do yibum. Because her husband died. Yeah. She's left with no children because her baby just died. Which means that what? She has to do yibum. Correct? Who? With the baby, exactly.
Yeah.
She has to do yibum with the baby.
To marry somebody else.
She's not allowed to marry anybody else until she does yibum. Yibum means she has to marry the brother of her late husband.
Maybe if this is somebody should marry, but actually is a law.
Yes, you can do chalitza. You can do either way. You can do either yibum or chalitza. Chalitza means that you take off the shoe, the whole ceremony, she spits at him, whatever. But after that ceremony, she's free to marry anybody. But you have to do that you have to do chalitza. She cannot marry anyone until you do chalitza or yibum, one of the two. The problem is it's a little baby. She has to wait 13 years until his bar mitzvah to do this ceremony.
What he's doing.
Right. So now she's got a problem. The daughter-in-law is now faced with a serious problem. She's not allowed to marry anybody because her baby's dead, which means she fell to yibum. She cannot do yibum for another 13 years because the baby of the mother-in-law, who's really the brother of her late husband, is a baby. She has to wait 13 years for him to grow up. Now she's stuck for 13 years. So what does she do? She says, listen, I'm going to lie and say that what? This is really my baby. Right? Now if this is my baby, then and Shlomo HaMelech believes me, then I'm good. Right? Because I have a baby. Right now I don't need to do yibum, right? Because now I have a baby. Plus, there's no one to do yibum with because the baby's dead. Right? So that was her plan. However, that plan was slightly flawed. Why was that plan flawed? Because she had a problem. It's true. Even if she lies and she gets away with it, according to the truth, she has what's called izikas yibum. She has, the halach is, when a woman, her husband dies, she has a connection to the brother. She's not allowed to marry anybody before she does the ceremony, chalitza, or even with a brother. Right? Now, it's not real marriage, obviously. She's not married to the brother yet. Right? But if she marries somebody else, she's, on some level, cheating on her on the brother. Because she has some kind of connection, right, to the brother. Now, who is the brother in this case? According to the truth, who's her brother? The baby.
The live baby.
Right? So if she marries somebody else, she's doing an avera. She's going against this connection that she has with the brother, who's the baby. Right? So that's why this plan was slightly flawed. But again, that was the best plan she had. Because what was plan B? Plan B was to wait 13 years. I'm not doing that. No way. Right? So, this is plan A. I'm going to go and lie about it. Hopefully I'll get away with it. Everyone will think it's my baby. I'm not subject to Yibum because they have a baby. Plus, there's no one to do Yibum with, right? The only problem was she has a connection to the baby, but whatever. Okay, so she'll do that Vera, and she'll marry somebody else, knowing that she has a connection to the brother, the baby.
What he says here, that she didn't want that either, because she really didn't want to take care of somebody else's baby.
Right, yeah, that's a different shot. But yeah. I'm saying now according to the Meiri. Yeah. According to the Meiri, right? So that was plan A, right? Because plan B was to wait 13 years, which she was not prepared to do. Right? Okay, so that was the best option that she had at this point. Right? To lie about it, and hopefully she'll get away with it, and she'll take the baby. This is my baby. Right? And then everything is pretty much good. Now, when they went to Shlomo HaMelech, what did Shlomo HaMelech say? Cut the baby in half. Now, what would that mean for her? That would take care of all of her problems. Right? Because now, she wouldn't even have a connection to the baby.
There's nobody to be connected to.
Exactly. There's no one to be connected to. She has no issue at all. She can marry anybody. No guilt whatsoever. No avera, because she has no connection to the baby, because the baby's dead. Right? The brother. So that's why when the true mother, who was her mother-in-law, she said, it's fine, you take the baby, I'll let you raise him, right? You can have him. She's thinking, no, that's not good, right? I want to stick to Shlomo's plan, Shlomo HaMelech's plan, because according to his plan, the baby's going to be killed, and then I'm going to be free as a bird. I'm allowed to marry anybody without any issue, right? Because I have no connection to the baby. That's why she says no. Let's cut him in half. Let's stick to whatever Shlomo HaMelech says. Yeah?
He says, give it to the mother-in-law. No.
Well, no. I'm saying,
it's her baby.
No, Shlomo HaMelech first said, cut the baby in half.
Yeah.
And the daughter-in-law was very happy with that, because that would mean...
She got a situation.
Exactly. That's why she insisted that we should, in fact, cut the baby in half.
So the baby went with the mother-in-law. She was still stuck.
Well, at the end, it was proven that, yeah.
No, wait. He brings down over here that she didn't want the other woman or this mother-in-law to rejoice over her, her primary motive was to make certain her companion would have no opportunity to rejoice over the tragedy which befell her child.
Hmm. Right.
All
right. Okay, it's a different shot. Yeah. I think this is according to the Meiri.
Tristan, why boss wants to have baby?
So, like I say, having the second child killed, and that's it.
Well, Akari, what did you say that? What?
No, but this is explain why two women wants to be mother. One is real mother, another
right.
Have another benefits, because if she is mother, for her something can benefit.
Right.
Not because she likes this baby, but because she likes herself.
Right. Oh, yeah, it was for selfish reasons.
Yeah, selfish.
Okay.
Well, he says it was he heard a shemra that this was the right one.
Yeah.
But it leaves us with a question. What happens to the daughter-in-law now?
He says, his decision
now is not no, now she has to wait 13 years.
The result of a divine voice which appeared and said, she is the mother.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it says that a basco came out after Shlomo HaMelech said it, a basco came out and said that Shlomo was right. He imoy. Oh. She is the mother. You know, the basco
Never understood it. How do you like that?
What?
I thought it was just the opposite all the time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So let's see, next pasuk, pasuk of Zayin. Vayan Melech vayomer, tnu lo es hayilu d'chai, v'meis leitam izu, hi imoi. Melech said, oh, okay, that obviously the mother-in-law, right, she's the true mother, let's give her the baby, and do not kill him, right? She is his mother.
I think I never understood it because I thought these just two women were not related at all.
Right.
You know, because it doesn't, you have to look in the Mefarshim to find that out. All right.
Well, yeah. With the pasuk, when you get down the pasuk, Vayera Melech Vayoma Tenulo Es Ayalud Achai.
Yeah.
Which one are you talking about now? Give
the live baby. Give the mother-in-law.
The live baby. He didn't say either one from the pasuk itself. And the king answered and said, give her the living child. Which one is he talking about?
Right. Well, he's talking about the mother who did not want the baby to
die. The mother-in-law.
Right, the mother-in-law. Yeah. Ve'ishmukol Yisrael, samishvat ha-shoshavat ha-melech, ve'iru mipnei ha-melech, all the Jewish people heard this famous court case that Shlomo HaMelech established, and they were fearful from him. Kiro ki chokmas elokim bekirbei lasois mishpat. They realized how wise he was, and how he is skilled to judge. So this is the end of the story, and now Shlomo HaMelech truly establishes his monarchy for everybody from all different aspects. And that's what we're going to see in the beginning of Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph opens up. Vehi Melech Shlomo Melech al Kol Yisrael. Shlomo is now king over all the Jewish people. And we have the Ma'ari Kra brings down three reasons that together strengthen his reign. First reason is the fact that David Melech, who appointed him while he was still alive to get the support of his father, was very important, and that in and of itself gave him great strength. Second one, what we spoke about over the past few weeks, how he killed out all the enemies, all the potential political enemies from within, he actually wiped out. He made sure no one was left alive. And third of all, the fact that he now has wisdom from the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and it was clear to everyone how smart he really was, that gave him great strength, and he was able to establish his monarchy very well. Now, this is in great contrast to Shaul, for example, that right in the beginning of his reign, there were people who insulted him, who went out against him, wasn't accepted upon everybody, and David HaMelech as well. David HaMelech had a lot of trouble. For the first 7 years of his reign, he was only a king over his own tribe, over Shevet Yehuda, only in one city, in the city of Hebron. Right? Shlomo HaMelech was the first king who had no trouble whatsoever, no one tried to go against him, everyone supported him, he immediately wiped out all of his enemies. It was clear and obvious to everyone that he's truly fit to be king, and he's got wisdom to do so. So now, the rest of the pasuk is parak is going to be a bit more technical. I'm going to go through the different different appointees, right? It's kind of like the president-elect. You know, he's got to appoint everyone. So now Shlomo HaMelech does it after the inauguration and not before. So pasuk base continues. Ve'ele asorim asher loy Azaryo ben Tzadok haKohen. So Azaryo was his first appointee. Azaryo was the son of Ahimaaz Tzadok. Now the pasuk does not specify exactly what kind of appointment this was. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, so, yeah. Okay, so let's see the next pasuk. Elicharef the Achia b'nei Shisha Seifrim. Elicharef and Achia, the son of Shisha, were the scribes for the king. Yoishavat ben Achilud Hamazkir. Yoishavat was the treasurer, the secretary. Secretary takes care of which case will be brought to the king.
Next.
What?
Which case will be taken
which case?
Next.
Meaning which court case?
Yeah.
Will be brought to the king next. First? Right. He deals with giving out the numbers at the door. Another pshat that's brought down is he was taking care of the Sefer HaZichronis, which means all the people that the king owes to. We find historically that all the kings had a book of favors they owed. The Chashverosh had a Sefer HaZichronis where he wrote that he owed a favor to Mordechai. So this was a book that he was in charge. He was in charge over to take care of all the king's personal affairs. Every favor he owed, people owed him money, whatever it was. And again, Benayahu was the general. We saw this even during the time of David HaMelech. David HaMelech also appointed Benayahu ben Yehoyada, who used to be the his general. But Tzalek v'Evyasar Koyhanim. Now it's very interesting. We saw in the previous parak that Evyasar, who came, was the last descendant of Beis Eli, the household of Eli, who was cursed that his household will be cut off from the kahuna. And in fact, Shlomo was the one to carry out that curse. And Shlomo got rid of Evyasar from being the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. So how do we find him over here? How did he show up over here? If he was thrown out, why was he appointed over here? So according to one pshat, this was, according to the Radak, it was a different Evyasar. It was really a different Kohen who had the same name. According to the Ralbag, however, it was the same Evyasar that was mentioned before, but even though he was kicked out, he would still fill in when Tzadlik was not able to be a Kohen Gadol. When he was impure, when he was Tameh, he would fill in. It's kind of like the vice Kohen Gadol. V'Azayahu ben Nosan al Nitzavim. Azayahu ben Nosan was in charge of the Nitzavim, the officials of the king. V'Zavud ben Nosan Kohen Rei HaMelech. Zavud was keeping company to the king. He had someone who would, you know, kind of comfort the king, keep him company, tell him jokes if he was tense, right? So that was the job of Zavud. He was there throughout the day, comforting the king, making sure that he was in a good mood. V'achishar al habayis, v'adoniram ben avdo al hamas. Achishar was the head waiter. He was in charge of the White House, I mean the palace, to make sure everything went well. Adoniram was taking care of the taxes. Set up his tax system in a very wise way. Unlike the IRS, who drains the American citizens for every penny, every spare penny they have, Shlomo HaMelech set up his tax system in a way where 1 month of every year was given to one of the tribes, meaning one of the tribes was in charge of 1 month. That way, for the remaining 11 months, they were free. They didn't have to pay taxes. Imagine only one month income of only 1 month you have to give taxes on. For 11 months, your income is tax-free. It would be amazing, right? I would love that. So that was a system that Shlomo HaMelech set up. That way, he did not burden the Jewish people, even though it says that his household was very large. He fed thousands and thousands of people every day. But because there was one tribe that was responsible for supplying everything for 1 month, they had plenty to give because for 11 months, they were completely free. Ve'el Shmeisam ben Chur Behar Ephraim. So there was one official who was in charge of every single tribe. Every single Shevet, there was one official to make sure that this tribe will in fact pay the taxes for that month. So now we're just going to go through the names for every tribe. Ve'el Shmeisam ben Chur Behar Ephraim. Ben Chur was in charge of Ephraim. Obviously the Shevet Ephraim. Ben Deker, Ben Makath, Ve'Shalavim, Ve'Chemesh. Ve'elin Beis Chanan, he was in charge. Ben Decker was in charge of these places. Ben Chesed in Arubais, Loi Soichoi v'chol Eretz Hefer, he was in charge of Eretz Hefer. Ben Avinadav, Kol Nafas Dor, Tofas Bashleimo Yisrael Leisha. Ben Avinadav was in charge of these areas. He actually was the son-in-law of Shlomo HaMelech.
That was later on. It was just
later on. When
just, he didn't. They wasn't that young, old enough to have kids yet. Or he had kids, but they were small.
Right. Yeah. That's yeah. Yeah. That was later on. Bano ben Achilut Tanoch Megidlo v'chol Beishan Asher Etzal Tzartana Mitachas LeYisrael MiBeishan Ad Evo Mecholo Ad Meiver LeYikom Am. So Bano was in charge of these areas, Israel and Yikom Am. Ben Geber Beramayz Kilad Loi Chavay Seir Ben Menashe Asher Begilod Loi Chavel Argoiv Asher BeBoshen Shishim Arim Gedolos Choyma Uvariach Nchoyshes. Achinodav Ben Idoi Machanaima, Achimatz ben Aftali, Gamhu Lakach Basmas Bashlami Laisha, he was also the son-in-law of Shlaimai, Bana ben Hushai Bashu Ba'olais, Yoshav ben Paruach be Sachar, Shimi ben Ela Bevinyamin, Geber ben Uri be Eretz Gilad, Eretz Sichin Melachemari, Vaig Melachabashan, Retziv Echad Asher Ba'aretz, Yud of Israel Rabbin Kehol Asher Alayam Larav, Eichlim Vishaisim Usmechim. Now, this is the first time, really, that they can be happy. They are free from war. There were no wars during the time of Shlomo, because David HaMelech took care of the Plishtim. They were so fearful of David HaMelech that when his son came into power, they did not dare start up with Shlomo. They left him in peace, and they left the Jewish people in peace. So they're now free of war. They were free of taxes for at least 11 months of the year. They had a very powerful king who proved himself to be very wise and very effective in dealing with tough situations. So they were very confident. That's why it says that they were eating, sleeping, eating, drinking, and they were happy. They had really nothing to worry about. So now, as we're going to see in the coming prakim, we're going to see how Shlomo HaMelech finds this is really the time, this is the perfect time to finally build the Beis HaMikdash. Because we now have peace from our neighbors, right? No one's bothering us. We have wealth. We're going to see later on exactly where his wealth came from. And therefore, he was able to build the Beis HaMikdash, and he was also a great fundraiser. He managed to gather, he did not fund the whole thing himself. He managed to have all the kings from all the surrounding nations to send donations to the Beis HaMikdash. And at least the materials, which were very expensive, they sent the materials to Shlomo HaMelech in order to build the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll stop here, and we'll see next week. We'll see how that transpires. Shkoyach.